Okay. Right, so the motivation, so I'll just start with some motivation, why we're interested in IR issues. And we already heard, well, essentially, I think two of my motivations were presented in the first two talks. The first one is that, well, just at the formal issue. Is this loud? Good. Yeah, so at the formal issue, we always hear that there's a clash between gravity and the UV, you know, between gravity and quantum mechanics and the UV. But it also, you know, in the sitter, they seem also to be a clash in the IR, right, the big scales. And so that's why, you know, how do you define formally quantum field in the sitter? And that's a very interesting question. And most of the issues are coming from the fact that the sitter is not asymptotically flat. So that's the formal aspects, which I will not talk about, but hopefully we'll hear about in this workshop. So it's, like I said, the clash, which is just quantum field theory, essentially, in the sitter on any space where it's not asymptotically flat. What my other motivation, which where I started looking at this, was just as a potential application for calculating loop corrections during inflation. So when we, as we heard from Yuko, when you calculate curvature correlation, R here is going to be my, or it's going to be essentially the zeta that we had before, on some scale, it's going to be some tree-level quantity plus, and then potentially some loop effect, which could depend on the momentum, just like this does. And the question is, can these ever be observable? Can this be ever lead to anything interesting in the data? Can we look for those? And in general, it doesn't look really good because these tend to be very small. If I just naively look at the size, for example, in slow roll, these loop effects will tend to be either, say, h squared over m Planck squared times epsilon, or maybe better, sometimes h squared over m Planck squared without the epsilon. But in both cases, this is like potentially a number, which is about 10 minus 12 at the biggest. So compared to 1, it's very, very negligible, and there's almost no hope to see this. There could be multiple fields, in which case you might get some n factors, but you know, you have to have a huge number of spectators fields to ever get something interesting. More interestingly, there are models where you could have strong interactions, like in the small sound speed models where you have also large non-Gaussianity. In this case, you can have, like, so for example, the small sound speed model, you can have something like h squared over n Planck squared. You get, in these theories, you get two enhancements. One, you get a factor of epsilon down, and you can get this small sound speed factor that enhances the whole thing. But yes, that's true, indeed. Yeah, in fact, I should point out a paper I wrote on this. But yeah, you're right. Even if you were to have, that's a good point. Even if you want to put as many fields as you want, you don't care if you 10 to the 10, then indeed we know that you run into a bound which we believe is pretty strong, that just from entropy consideration, that there should be a limit on the number of fields, assuming they're all distinguishable. Also, this has been redirected by on black hole physics, Belly. It's been going on about this bound. So this is a, yeah. But I mean, even assuming this guy is less than 10 to the minus 12. So I'm not willing to consider 10 to the 12 field. But so, but if you want to, then yeah, this could maybe be a bit newer to have some problem. All right, and you can get models where this is much bigger, but then you still have a problem that, well, we know that inflation is a weakly coupled system. We know that from the measurement of non-Gaussianity, it's weakly coupled. And indeed, this guy here essentially is a power spectrum. So that's about, with the CS here, if you have a sound small speed, so that's about 10 minus 10. And then this cannot be as small as you want, because otherwise you'll be boosting the three-point function. So if you put the constraint from the measurement of the power spectrum together with what we know the constraint on non-Gaussianity, this is still has to be less than 10 minus 5. So even if you consider strongly coupled theories of inflation that give you like the maximum non-Gaussianity we can see, we still have a very small correction at the loop level. So the only way we're going to see something, I believe, I mean, 10 minus 5, maybe, you have to think that this could be seen as a correction to the spectral index. So we do measure the spectral index to 10 to minus 2. Maybe a Planck should reach 10 to minus 3. So, you know, I don't know, if you're futuristic, maybe this could be even detectable. But most probably, we're not going to see loop effect unless it's somehow you have some IR enhancement. So so that's why, I mean, that's my motivation to look at IR. One of the motivations to look at IR enhancement is that, well, they could lead to observable effect. And I'm not calling it divergences because, well, at least in the framework I would be talking about, I'm just saying that the coupling, the size of the loops is just going to be bigger than what you naively expect. And this is, we already know this happens in thermal field theory. So so I'll redo that. That'll be my goal. And I mean, there's another issue which we just discussed, and we're going to discuss many times, I think, in this workshop, is whether, in, for example, a single field versus multi-field, whether the IR divergences that you can find for the scalar field propagates all the way to the curvature correlation. And that's a very non-trivial question, and again, I will not talk about this, so I'm just going to assume that maybe you need multi-fields to have IR effects. Maybe it's possible in single field, just leave it as an open question. Hopefully you can figure this out during this workshop. But So let me just look at the Toy-Marlowe, which is very well known, lambda 5 Fortin de Sitter. Where I'm going to use for the sitter, I'm going to use the Poincaré patch, which shouldn't matter. So this is a well-known model, and most of what I'm going to tell you is also very well known. And potentially, the new thing is the way maybe I get to some of these answers, which has been known for many years now. In particular, I'd like to present that in this kind of loop calculation, you get IR divergences, but you also get circular growth in time, so log that grows in time. And I'd like to present a new way to resum these circular growth in time. And then discuss when you can do it and when you cannot do it. Okay. But first I'll just review very quickly with thermal story. So lambda 5 Fort at finite temperature. I don't want to review the whole thing. Obviously, I just want to tell you the salient features that I'm interested about. And then I'll do lambda 5 Fort in the sitter. And then I'll present this use the dynamical normalization group, dynamical RG. To resum the circular growth. Yes. Well, I'll sometime put a mass in, but yes, I'll be specific in which calculation. I'll first do it in a mass test case, and then I'll put it in. Yes. So I'm not. When I get to the calculation, I'll specify that. Okay. All right. So the thermal. So the only thing I want to remind you of thermal is first, well, you do have IR divergences also in thermal field theory. At one loop, if I use a Matsubara short imaginary time, this one loop diagram is perfectly finite, something like D3P. So I'm just going to keep like the n equals 0 frequency. So it's D3P over P square, which is a very well finite integral, no problem. And so it's finite and it's essentially equal to lambda T. So you don't have any problem at one loop, but at two loops, you can start getting some problems. So there should be lambda here, I guess. And this is dimension mass, yep. So if you do a two-loop diagram like this, where I have P here and then two Qs, then this is lambda square T. I'm being very sketchy for this part. Each Q, Q to the 4. And then these two propagator here running here are what's giving you an IR divergences. And if you assume that there's actually a mass, say a bare mass for it, then you'll expect this is just 1 over whatever bare mass you have in your Lagrangian, and then this whole amplitude goes like lambda t squared over m naught. So that if you were to take m naught to 0, this would actually be a divergence.
So what are you calculating?
What am I calculating?
I'm calculating, take the
Matsubara propagator, where it's really a sum over half the Pn here, plus P squared is a tree momenta, plus then whatever a mass. And I'm just saying, then in this you do a sum over frequencies and an integral over tree momenta. And I'm just looking at the n equals 0, which is where the IR divergence is. And that's essentially
N equals 0. Okay.
Yeah, the n equals 0 okay. Matsubara frequency. Any other question?
These are thermal corrections to the mass of the field, right?
Yes, well, this is what I'm getting to. So you can think of these diagrams. You could do the usual query in thermal field theories. You can resum all these diagrams. You can resum all the ring diagram, and you can think of this as an address propagator where now you change your bare mass. You get a physical mass to be whatever you started with as your bare mass, say, plus a correction, which is coming essentially from resumming this diagram to any power, so it's lambda t squared. Okay? So that's the usual story, and this is usually called the thermal mass and so forth. And if you assume that you started with m not zero, then you say, well, this diagram is divergent, but if I get this thermal mass contribution, then what's happening is this loop correction is actually enhanced. It's not, if I replace m naught by m physical, Then, and I put m naught to 0, so it's going to be square root of lambda here. I get lambda to 3 half times t. So what you find is that this loop contribution is actually bigger than you first expected. Okay, and this is just the IR enhancement that occurs in thermal field theory. So what I want to just argue here is at least you can draw a similar picture, but slightly different in the sitter. And And one of the interesting things I should say here is that nothing goes wrong in this calculation, at least at one loop, if I take this to be negative. That's tachyonic. And then you see you still potentially can get that the two cancels exactly, in which case you would be at the critical point where the physical mass is 0. And then it seems like, at least at this one loop point of view, you have a breakdown of this loop expansion. Let me go here. All right, I came in before. So just so I can save some time.
For Pagetto for the tachyonic thermal fields?
How do I define this? I'm in this case, I'm thinking of just, just switching M to M minus M. I'm not thinking of anything.
But you don't have it commuted?
There are
is independent on the temperature, so
yeah.
The green functions are not defined, not well defined.
Yes, but I mean, I'm still thinking here that the physical mass is, so after resummation, the physical mass can be positive. If the physical mass is less than 0, then I don't really know what to do. But I'm just saying, at least naively here, and I haven't maybe taught really all the full implications of it. Naively here is nothing goes wrong at this level if I just put m minus m dot
in this particular step.
Yeah. But I agree that maybe on the issue. Right, so I just didn't want to. So in the sitter, I'm going to do a pretty similar calculation. So I'm going to set the metric to be just the maybe write the usual FRW, so the Poincaré patch of the sitter. And so I want to calculate down to phi 4, and I want to calculate phi squared. Like I said in this talk, I'm not worrying whether this is going to be a gauge invariant quantity or whether I want to go back to curvature. So this is really just a spectator in the sitter. And I want to calculate this amplitude here to one loop. And I'm going to work the momentum space where I have, so I'm doing an informalism, so I have a propagator, a Feynman propagator, which I'm going to expand for late time. So tau is the conformal time, so tau goes to 0 is the future infinity. So I'm going to expand for this, and then this is just the usual Enkel function expanded at late time. And this is the retard propagator, which is again expanded at late time. And I'm going to include a counter term for the mass, and I'm just going to just have one interaction. There's another vertex, but it's not contributing to what I'm talking about. All right, so
what's the dashed line?
So this is just my notation for the retarded propagator versus the, so these are just two, I could.
Yeah, but I mean in the interaction.
So that means that when I have when I'm going to do my loop, I'm going to need, every time I can connect these two, but this is going to have to be a retarded propagator. In fact, my loop is just going to be what I just did here. So that's just telling you that you need a retarded propagator coming in here.
You've got two fields in the problem that Jim probably doesn't see yet.
Yeah, sorry. So in informalism, yes, I have to double the number of fields, and so I have two type of propagators. And and then I have the Feynman rules. So this is an interaction. So if I double the number of fields in my Lagrangian, I have an interaction between, say, my notation C and R, but it's going to be phi first field times phi. So I have it's not really a quartic interaction now. It's two fields and one cube. Okay, so first let me set up, so the reason why I have divergence, I don't even need to go to one loop really, I could just look at this thing at tree level where I need to Fourier transform this, and so just evaluate this at the coincident point, and then of course you just get d3k over k cube roughly if I drop the fast space part. And this is divergent both in the UV, log divergent both in the UV and the IR. Okay. And so there are many ways you could regulate this. Here I'm going to be not a good way, but it works at least at one loop in this problem, and I'm just going to put cutoff in the UV and the IR. So I'm going to take, and the tricky part about if you use cutoff, in addition to not working very well in general and not being easily generalizable through two loops, you also have to be careful about using co-moving momentum. So if I just restrict the co-moving momentum to be between a UV cutoff and an IR cutoff here, both of which eventually needs to be fixed, then this integral is going to be finite, just log. And but then I need to add the counter term to this. Sorry.
It's actually the physical momentum that you are restricting. So it's in terms of physical.
Sorry. This is co-moving, so the physical momentum is what you need to impose a cutoff on.
Is it really going to be important that the infrared cutoff is physical?
No, so I'll come to this. So at this moment, I'm not. This could depend on time. Yes.
I would expect the infrared cutoff to be given a co-moving cutoff.
Yes. For example, if you do if you assume that what's making your infrared physics finite is a beginning translation or just a spatially finite slice of the sitter, then in general, this would be exactly what you're saying, is a co-moving cutoff. And then you will have some time dependence that will show up. You can also say, well, if I assume that the physics that triggered the infrared is fixed in physical, then you get different answers. So in fact, one of the points would be that when I do this DRG, it really works well if for the case where you assume it works and you get good answers if I take an IR to be fixed in the physical.
The integration are restricted on one half of the restrictor space-time?
Yes, I'm just restricting the point carrier branch. Yeah.
So everything works only on alpha.
Yes.
Are you compensating with the other alpha?
I think the case that will be the case I would like to do first is going to be the sitter invariant. The answer. I don't think it's going to matter if I'm doing the point carrier patch. But I agree in general it does matter. But here I am only integrating. I'm choosing this coordinate system. Tau goes from minus infinity to zero. It does not cover all of the sitter. Only covers. Right. So I need to add that counter term. So I'm just going to choose a renormalization scheme. Which what's happening here is that it's A square, so A lambda IR, A lambda UV. Again, the A is the scale factor, and that's because this is a co-moving momentum. And then I just do minus S and just put a renormalization point here. Actually, that's UV A. So that's just a renormalization scheme. That's what my counter term does. And it just changed on the UV to mu. I don't know why I'm bothering writing this equation really, but so at the end I get that this integral is log some h square log of mu over lambda IR. And then you have to tell me what the physics that regulates the IR is, or choose, or tell, so is it really, is it like a beginning of inflation, or is it a mass, or what is it? And so if you choose lambda IR to be time dependent, you'll get different answer than if you choose it not time dependent, essentially. Okay, so yeah. But the important thing is at this stage I don't need to assume anything, except for the time dependence, because the point is I can trust the calculation of the coefficient of the log by doing the UV computation. I don't need to actually include whatever is the IR physics at this point, because I can get the right coefficient here just by doing UV computation. Okay, so now I can do this loop diagram here. Okay, so let's just do as a first choice. Let's assume that I have a de Sitter invariant situation where whatever is the infrared physics that's making this integral finite is such that this guy here is a constant. Does not depend on time, for example. So that's a choice, and I'll check. You can try different things. But if you try that, then you calculate this loop here. So this is the loop diagram that I want to calculate. This is the first loop correction, so I'm calculating GC is K tau 1 tau 2 is equal to the tree level plus one loop plus counter term to make the UV finite. And this is tau 1, tau 2, so two different times, and this tau here, it's called tau prime, the time at which the interaction occurs, you need to integrate over. So when I calculate this one loop diagram, so this this integral here is going to be just the integral of this evaluated at the same time. So it's exactly what I just wrote. It's the same as the pi square of x. And when you put this in, so this, let's call this, this is just essentially what I was calling pi square of x, okay, which let's just call it lambda here. Okay. And then you just have to add this Feynman propagator here and this retarded propagator there. Okay, so now, well-known result is that the propagator of lambda phi fourth at one loop is just whatever you get at tree level times 1 plus, then it's lambda, there's some factors, it's log of mu over lambda IR, times log, let me back up one step, because I want to make a distinction. Then you write it as lambda, the integral over time of, GR, GF, and then times this lambda, which is my loop integral. So this lambda here is the integral, really, from lambda IR to mu A of D3K over K2. Okay, sorry. This is all clear? That's true. So this is D tau prime. And and the vertex has an A to the 4 over tau prime. So I just have, so this is just the same, this is this thing here. I'm just saying this loop integral is this lambda, and then I just have the retarded propagator and the Feynman propagator. So you get two things. You get this higher divergences, but this integral also gives you a circular growth. So this ends up being GC0, K tau times 1 plus lambda. Okay, so now here's a big one, but with the speech I was giving you before about assuming that, or choosing physics where this is time independent. You don't get, sorry. No, you're right. Yes. Let me just image write it like this. Yeah, sorry. Parentheses are the wrong place. Now I'm going to put the parentheses. Because the thing is I can factor it out and just leave the correction. Yes. So if I take this to be time independent, then I can get it out of the integral, then my integral is just d tau, and then you can put with the tau cube here, ends up being a d tau prime over tau prime, and this is supposed to be integrated from minus infinity, and the retarded propagator puts a limit at tau. Okay, and I'm always keeping like the most dominant piece. There are always finite corrections to all of everything I'm calculating. Here I'm trying to keep the, just to get the log. So in other words, you get two things. You get this log of mu over lambda IR, this, IR divergence, and you also get a circular growth in time. Okay. This here was only valid for minus k tau, is much less than 1. For tau before that time, as Yuko was saying, the thing oscillates very quickly. So actually, here is really, technically you are really integrating from minus infinity to tau prime, but it's oscillating at earlier time, and so to a good approximation, you can drop the part that's coming from these earlier times. So this is the log of minus k tau, which we often get when you do this kind of calculation, and lambda, then log, say mu over lambda IR. Okay, 1 plus this. Okay, and it's probably an h square, actually. Well, but I can factor it out. Okay, and I haven't kept track as factors of 2 pi's and so forth. So what you're getting is just 2 logs. And so the point here, first I want to make, is that, in this case, this thing is divergent both when lambda IR goes to 0 and also both when tau goes to 0. The tau goes to 0 limit is not a problem. You can resum that in this case. Okay, and the way, one way to do it is this dynamical renormalization group. So the idea is just that, as in renormalization groups, sometimes you calculate a quantity. Perturbatively, you find that, for example, some coupling constant as a function of the renormalization point is some value plus some correction times a log. And then the Gell-Mann and Lowe type of way of doing RG would just be say, well, you can take a so this equation is only valid when alpha is less than 1, and alpha log is much less than 1. So just like we have here, perturbation theory breaks down not just when lambda is less than 1 or lambda times this, but it also breaks down at late time. So the way to deal with this, I can just take a derivative with respect to mu and then integrate with respect to mu. You're not doing much, just derivative that integrates, but the final equation is actually valid, is much more valid. You know, the regime of validity has been extended. Alpha mu plus 1 over alpha naught. When you do this, take derivative and then integrate, and b log of mu. This is the sort of after you do the integral. And this equation is actually valid as long as alpha is much less than 1. You don't need to assume that the log is small. So the same thing, exact same thing can be done here. So the thing is, that, and this occurs in condensed matter system, if you have a function y of t, it's really not even, it's a trick, mathematical trick you can do when you solve perturbatively a differential equation that depends on some parameter, and you find that there's some constant plus some function, y1 of t, that grows with time, times some small parameter, say epsilon, then you can just sort of do a similar trick here, which I probably don't have time to talk about. In fact, now I'm all confused. I'm finishing at 12:45. Okay, I think I was stressing out a little too much. Okay, good. So this naive expansion and then this order epsilon squared. So if this function grows circularly with time, then this perturbative expansion will break down some late time, even though you originally wanted an expansion in this small parameter epsilon or lambda. But the point is, just like this kind of RG here, you can resum that through a renormalization group. Yeah. And what you get by doing this little exercise is, use this renormalization group on this equation here, I can resum this log of minus k tau, and what you find is that the one-loop resum propagator, GC, GC resum is GC, well, let me write it down. So my original three-level thing times now the resummation gives me essentially the exponential of lambda log of mu L, or mu lambda I L, times log of minus k tau, times 1 plus order lambda square correction. Or potentially finite pieces also in lambda, which I draw. And so in this, you recognize right away, so this is just minus k tau to some power. Let's call it delta. And this is just what you would have taken as your massive propagator if you had started. The massive propagator for a scalar field in the sitter has exactly this form and then at late time. So it's h squared over k cubed, and then you have this minus k tau here. And now you see that as tau goes to 0, it's no longer divergent. It's perfectly finite. So effectively what you did is you resummed a bunch of diagram. But, I mean, some people have done this resummation explicitly. But here, just using a randomization group to achieve the same thing and resum all these diagrams, and what you find is you essentially have a massive propagator. So delta here is just literally this thing, lambda log of mu. So, yeah. Up to factors, which I'm dropping consistently here.
Integral d3k of this form, right?
Yes, after the resummation, you can then go ahead and evaluate again.
And that means you're getting an effect which is going like 1 over lambda.
Yes, right? You're getting a 1 over... So what's happening here is this is going to be, so the massive propagator is written usually h squared over kq times minus k tau of epsilon here, where epsilon is m squared over h squared times 3. Okay, so this is the massive propagator. So indeed, what you're getting here is you're getting the same answer you would get from a massive propagator, but with a mass equal to lambda times this log, which we don't know what it is.
But all you've done is you've picked the normalization point in your subtraction scheme in such a way that the mass is not zero.
Yeah, you could say that. Because, indeed, so I can choose So I resum a bunch of diagrams. I started with the bare mass, and now I choose my diagram such that now I I found that there's a mass. But indeed, I could have another mass, and it really, if you start with a massive propagator, I would get this plus the original mass I start with, and then.
It's more to it than that, because you've actually grouped many graphs.
Right.
That's why it's an exponential lambda, right? So it's right.
You just rewritten the propagator in infrared. Now with the normalized mass, which is now time, it's not anymore zero. And you've done it in a correct way.
It's turned out to be that, but it didn't start off that way. So you could have set out to just stick in a mass which was not zero. And then ask at some fixed order in the loop expansion, how does the thing depend on mass? But that's not how you go into this calculation. In this calculation, you go in saying that you've got a massless propagator, and you're summing a class of graphs using this algorithm for the large time limit. And you got something which looked like it was. But it didn't need to be that way. So if you had done
it. Yeah, in fact, if you like lambda phi cube, you don't get that.
What I'm saying, I could have just written the machine passing equation. I can renormalize it by including this 4-point diagram.
But if you did say phi cube theory, it wouldn't have been a mass. Right. So the thing is,
No. Then I would have said, okay, my normal. I would have. In my interpretation of the mass, I would have normalized mass. And then I could have solved this propagator with my normalized mass. And if it was not zero, I would get a Fermi function. Which, of course, would produce any sound.
But that's an ex post facto argument, right? Because there's no.
No, it's not.
Well, the thing is that we know it's false in other examples. That this resummation does not give you a mass.
I think he might be referring to the effective mass that you get. So if you calculate the effective mass in your propagator by resumming an infinite subclass of diagrams, as what you're doing is equivalent to, then you would get an effective mass, which gets non-perturbative contributions that will be finite. I think that when he's referring to renormalized mass, he means
the equation of motion.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there's nothing that says that. There's two infinite set of classes, graphs that you could sum, and I think what you're saying is that if you shifted the propagator by an amount, then if you just did all the vacuum insertions of a mass, that's one class of graphs you could have summed. This algorithm tells you to sum a different class of graphs, and in this particular theory, they agree. But they don't need to agree in a general theory, is the statement.
What it is?
But if you do it in the equation of motion, there is no resummation whatsoever.
The RG does not specify which diagrams we're resumming. Yes.
Which diagrams are you resumming?
No, so we're not. You could do it by resumming like the chain diagram, but the RG is not really resumming. You were not specifying which diagram you were summing.
But you could.
It would be essentially a chain diagram like in thermal.
Precisely the diagrams you wrote there. Right.
Yeah, the chain diagram.
The same thermal. Yeah.
Yes?
So this theory could be solved in the late-time limit using the Storodinsky-Yokogawa.
Yes, I will comment on that.
Technique. And then the dev of p squared, if I remember correctly, goes like 1 over the square root of lambda. You're getting 1 over lambda.
No, but it's going to be, yeah, you're right, it's going to be square root of lambda. The thing is that, so I don't know what this is yet. It's not fixed. So this is not telling you what the mass is. This method, the RG does not, because it's still dependent on this whatever lambda IR is here, which I never specified. So to get, and I completely agree with the Starobinsky and Yokoyama story, which would tell you essentially this actually should not be lambda, but square root of lambda, like you're saying. And so what happened is you need to do something else to figure out what this IR physics is here. You need to do.
I'm really confused about this, because typically, if I was thinking about it in Starobinsky Yokoyama, I wouldn't even have that other time dependence, and I'd have lambda IR be something like what Robert suggested.
Yeah, the log A.
Yeah.
Yeah, so essentially, if I start with, say, assuming a beginning of inflation, or just that the or a physical co-moving cutoff in the IR, so just like a finite box size kind of thing, then indeed, so this can have to be taking out the integral now, and so you get a dependence here, and you can go through the calculation and you get exactly the answer to Starobinsky and Yokoyama that you have in your paper with Thomas.
Can you show me how that happens? So this is just not operable, right? If lambda is time dependent.
Yes. Okay. So if maybe I can get this one. So if I mean, roughly what's happening is so if you imagine that there's two things that could regulate the IR, I could say there's a mass, in which case, let's just modify the propagator. And the beginning with inflation is a bit, so this is just a massive propagator and the late time limit. I could say, well, imagine that there's a box size so that for, say, some commoving momenta, there's no, you know, this propagator is no longer valid, you should use fast space. So there's a radiation error prior to inflation, so I can just regulate this, putting a cutoff. This is, you know, just put a, this is not a real solution to the equation motion, but because it has, you know, it's an infinite step. But let's do something like this. Then indeed, you'll find that if the mass is big, if the mass is small, and you don't wait too long, then what's cutting your infrared divergences is the fact that you have a big inflation. And you can do the integral, and you get exactly, before you do, you just quote the answer, because it takes a little while, but you get something like, at one loop, you get two things. You get a log. Now, essentially, imagine you're doing your integral. Forget about epsilon, say epsilon is zero. You're integrating from a zero to mu a in my notation, where this is the co-moving, this is the UV stuff. And now, this propagator, which is a theta k minus 1 over L, h over k cube. And so what you get is a log of mu a times L, so that's your log a, mu L, whatever. But you also get another contribution, which depends on k mu L for h. And then when you Fourier transform, this is at one loop, and then when you Fourier transform this, you're going to get exactly the log a square plus finite part that you get in the turbulence in your gamma. And you also get it at the tree level. So you get, in the turbulence, you start where you get phi square of x. Once you Fourier transform, it's log a plus log a cubed, sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
Plus and so forth. And the coefficient, doing this methods with this kind of propagator gives you the same coefficient.
If I take the late time limit of the Stravinsky over Yama solution, I'm pretty sure it goes like 1 over the square root of lambda.
Yeah.
Yes.
So again, here I'm not...
So this is just not operable, right, in that way of thinking?
Well, first of all, this...
The IR is time dependent.
Yes. This looks like order lambda, but it's not. Okay, and it should be order square root of lambda. The point is that we don't know what this log here is, so you need to solve it. And you have to do like a mean field method, what's happening is if I write this is m square, so I have a mass here plus a correction. So m square physical can be seen as my original mass, say coming from a bare mass here. So this is like m naught squared. Plus this new contribution. No, what do I want to do? Okay,
Sorry, can I just say, I think you want to reiterate the point that if there is a mass, you don't have to worry, if the mass is such that you don't have to worry about the other radiation error, then this does agree. I mean, right, so. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be able to deal with a gain of inflation if the mass is such that that's what's actually more relevant. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. I think to get what the mass is, the best way is not to start with the massless case like I did and put a cutoff. The best way is to start, I start with a mass, so let me start with f sub n naught. Then my propagator is h square over kq times minus k tau to the epsilon. And this is perfectly infrared finite. And then what you find is if you integrate this with the d3k, this is 1 over epsilon, essentially, in the IR. And this is what I used to call my log of mu over lambda IR. And so you see that, and so then what I can do is say, okay, so I have this massive propagator, I can do the loop, it's the same thing as if I had a massive propagator, I have minus k tau to the epsilon, times 1 plus lambda over epsilon, times log of minus k tau. Okay, so this is what I wrote before. It has the 1 over epsilon is the log of mu lambda IR, and I have log of minus k tau, which is the second reference time. I can resum that, and I get h square over kq, minus k tau, epsilon plus some delta, where now this delta is lambda over epsilon. This guy here. And so then I get that my mass, my physical mass, looks like it's my bare mass plus a lambda correction that's divided by my bare mass again. And presumably I need some... No, that's... Well, I need this way. Interpretation. Yes. But still, so what this is if I plot this, it looks like this. This is m physical and m naught. And so it has a minimum. It has a minimum at you can solve, and it's exactly like you were saying. Square root of lambda times h square. I should say minimum of m physical. But this is like, this is where you need to do a mean field approximation like Sarvancino-Cameron does, or maybe better to do a stochastic where they can get the coefficient right. Well, right, yeah. And, or you could do large n.
Square root of lambda. Why isn't it lambda? The m square.
Yeah, so that's one of the distinctions I want to make. But let me make sure first that I got the square all correct. I think I do.
That's good.
So indeed, this one of the strange things in this whole thing is that this is not lambda, the square root of lambda. It's different from what you you get at the thermal field theory, where you would get lambda. Yes, lambda here and then m square root of lambda. That means that m physical is actually lambda to the 1/4.
Is there something that the Benamal normalization group tells you in this model that you couldn't get from the Sarvancino formalism?
I don't know how to apply the Sarvancino formalism. Well, maybe, I'm not sure, I guess is the question. Because, I mean, I always see the Sarvancino done with the beginning. You know, you start inflation at some time, and so you get these log A, and then a tree level. I imagine you could do it, because here I'm assuming that it's way after the beginning of inflation. I already have a mass. It's the Sitter invariant, so my tree level answer is a constant. You know, roughly just the usual answer, h to the 4 for m squared. So I'm assuming that I'm already far away from the beginning of inflation, that my mass is just making my answer infinite final. So I'm not sure if in that case I can use the Sarvancino preamble, but
that's the main
idea.
Didn't they actually, that paper also estimate the lifetime behavior for this one?
You get basically
So
what does it mean that it's not clear whether you can use it? They did use it to calculate this quantity.
Yes, well, yeah, they show that you can approach, but with the beginning inflation, you approach this and you get the 1 minus corrections of this.
I'll give you a derivation of it Friday. Feldman equations. You can just show that Sarvancino and Yokoyama resum the leading invariant logarithms.
Mm. Right.
Yes, you're right. So they didn't prove it, but we haven't proved it.
Yeah.
And it's true to all orders.
So we were just happy that this other way agreed.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, this is indeed, this is just sort of the naive way you would do it from, you do your quantum field theory, you can do, you just do a normalization group, and it works perfectly if you assume that it's a mass and you're far away from the beginning of inflation. If there is a beginning of inflation, then this method does not work as well as there is.
So a lot of us are obsessed with trying to extend these resummation techniques to theories which have derivative interactions, like, for example, gravity. Can you gain any traction on that?
Would he tell you how to do it? I have not thought about that.
Yes, the main thing for gravity is that it's not clear whether, I mean, you cannot simply introduce mass.
No, that's true. So gravity is also, yeah. Yeah, you have to.
So wait,
yes,
this calculation, do you also get exactly the same coefficient that they get, or you get the same dependence, but do you get also the same
coefficient? No, so you cannot even, so this coefficient here, so the resummation does not tell you what the physical mass is. You have to do essentially like a mean field. If you have large n, you can calculate it
exactly.
But you can do a mean field approximation.
If
you do a mean field, then you don't get the right coefficient.
Well, you will not.
No, not with mean field. That's right. But the point is here, the idea is it's a simple theory. You can resum the logarithmic time quickly, you get hints that you know, you generate a mass, just like you do zero filtering. The mass is, has a different scaling than internal, so it's very analogous to the resummation internal filter. Yes, with some notable difference among them that the scaling is different. And it's also this divergence of that one loop, not at two loops. Which, so, yeah, it's not, I'm not claiming that this is better. I mean, I think it's, to me, it's, I understand it better, but that's just because harvesting a camera is a bit beyond just quantum field theory. And, but, yeah, I'm not saying, I'm not trying to say that this should replace other resummation techniques. It's just one on one. That works in this case. So, okay. Actually, I kind of went through in this order too much. Okay, so then let me summarize. Right, so what we, so I've shown that if you start with lambda 5.4, you have both iron averages, which are, you have iron enhancement. Essentially, you can have bigger effects because your perturbation series. Again, here what's happening is that if I start with zero mass, I see a resum. What's happening is if my mass is of order square root of lambda h square, you find that this series, instead of going like lambda, so if you take this resum, then what you find, so I have originally, I have this, where this is epsilon naught log of minus k tau, where this is my, say, my bare mass. I resum what I found is minus k tau to an epsilon naught plus a new correction, epsilon naught. So this is epsilon naught here. And then here there was some finite correction, but now everywhere I should replace, this is my new physical mass, as you want, and so if I put, and we're saying it's essentially, this is should be now, after the resummation, this is m physical, which is square root of lambda h square, like we've been saying. Then here it should be epsilon physical plus order lambda square. And so, and then I don't have the log of minus k tau because I applied the DRG, so I resummed it. And so what you find is that the perturbation series indeed enhance compared to what you had before, because this, this has a square root of lambda, so lambda over square root of lambda gives you this lambda 1 half. Okay. Next to, no, so I'm, well, because here, everywhere I dropped that there was, I mean, there are finite pieces here. I always just kept the log. Yes, also that. No, maybe I'm not. Okay, maybe we can talk about this. I'm not sure I'm getting that. But, yeah. Anyway, so this is a good, I mean, this is where the hopes that if you have this infrared enhancement, then it's not like the thing is really divergent. It's just, at least in this case where you have a mass, it's just that it's bigger than what you first thought, just like in thermal fit theory. And so this, my bound of, like, the thing that I was saying at the beginning, that in inflation you usually don't have any effects. Now, if somehow the naive coupling that we wrote down was not a correct one, it's bigger because you have some infrared just enhancement coming from the fact that you're living in the sitter, then you can maybe have some observable effects, okay? So this is very analogous to what happens in thermal field theory, except that, again, in thermal, usually the mass is lambda t square, like I said in the beginning, and now here we found square root of lambda h square. But also the divergence is not 1 over m. The divergence is lambda over epsilon, which I'm writing as m square h square here. So at the end of the day, you get essentially, again, the lambda 1 half. So at the level of the loop, you get roughly the same enhancement you expect. Except that, again, it's at one loop. So there are some, it's, the story is very similar to thermal, but at the same time, different. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know if the difference is somewhat just because of our choice of coordinate system or, you know, because one loop, two loops can vary depending on what you're doing. So I don't really know. Okay, well, that's the other, yeah, just saying it's plainly different from not, it. So this notion that the sitter and thermal are, you know, they're not exactly, it's not just putting t equal to h. You see here, you have a different, you really have a different scaling in lambda.
In other words, you have more infrared
enhancement than in the thermal. Yes. And then, so if you do phi cube, you can see that actually this doesn't work. it doesn't give you a mass. You can get these logarithms k-tau, you can apply the same techniques, and you just, it's sending you phi cubed does not generate the dynamical mass. It just really, it grows with time, and essentially a signal that phi cubed is a sick theory. I mean, the potential is not bounded from below. And one other thing we did, and I'll just end on this quickly, I think, is that you showed in this theory, using
phi cubed.
So phi cube, I cannot resum. I don't know how to resum the log of minus k tau circular growth.
Is it worse for
me? Well, I guess it's worse. I guess it's like the value just keeps growing in time, and there's no minimum to get to. So it just keeps growing and growing. Yeah. And and one thing you can show also in this theory, which is non-trivial, but in n-formalism, in this bunch of these vacua, you can show power counting that you never get worse than the log of lambda IR. You always, so there's no power law divergence in lambda IR. So all the, whatever diagrams you draw in the in formalism, you always get log. The divergence in the IR are always log at worst, or log to some power. And in the in out, it's easy to show that that's not true anymore.
Lambda can have at most two logarithms.
That's like at two loops or something, you never get more than log squared?
Well, there can be an overall effect coming from what the lowest order term is. Like if you looked at the expectation value of phi to the a, then that would grow like logarithm to the fourth. But what I'm saying is if you look at corrections to it that involve lambda, each extra lambda can give at most logarithm squared in phi to the four. And if you had a to the nth interaction, the result would be that each extra power of that vertex could give at most logarithm of n over 2.
Okay.
Or n over 2 logarithms.
I like your meta quiz, but I think it makes sense. I'm not sure, but I think it makes sense to me. I'm sure you're right. I'm just trying to see what stuff works. Whether we have that already in our calculation. All right, well, I'll end on this. But so, yeah, the message is that DRG is a good way to resum these things, at least when you have for a massive case where you have a dissident invariance and resum nicely, and the story is quite similar to thermal with some interesting differences. Okay.